Welcome to The Lisa Show.
Hi, this is Lisa.
Hey, it's me, Richie T.
You know what's good for you?
A bunch of things that I can do for the weekend.
Welcome to The Lisa Show. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark.
And I am Richie T.
Have you ever heard of the term rewilding, going back to the wild?
No.
Well, we're talking about it in 20 minutes.
Also, we're going to talk about an anniversary celebrated in the way that you never want your anniversary to be celebrated.
Oh,
that's
dear.
Coming up in your Morning Buzz. Why, in just 15 short minutes.
New research in The Origins of You that studied over 4,000 families found that being a good neighbor would improve your parenting and supports child development. Now, knowing that our relationship with our neighbor could impact our family in such a big way, and knowing how divided many of us are culturally and politically, I think we could all use some tips on how to become friendlier neighbors. So, what makes a good neighbor? Think about a time where you had a really good neighbor, or maybe a bad neighbor. At what point do we cross that line between friendly neighbor and intrusive neighbor? And here to answer all of our questions is Dr. Elaine Swan, an etiquette expert, to discuss how to connect our communities so that we can get all those benefits that found that the support to our children's development and our parenting, we can really get the benefits from them. Thank you for being here, Dr. Swan.
It's my absolute pleasure.
Okay, so I think in our minds, we're racing and we're trying to think, okay, well, what is it that makes a good neighbor? What's your perspective on that?
Well, the key, the thing that makes a good neighbor is to be neighborly. And when we think about that kind of almost from the biblical sense of the word,
mm-hmm.
it really is thinking about your fellow man and treating them with kindness, with compassion, and with respect. And you can do that in a variety of ways. It doesn't matter whether you live in a house or a townhome or even an apartment complex or an apartment building. You can still be neighborly. You can still treat people with kindness, with compassion, and also respect. And so those are the core values mm-hmm. that we share often.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking back to how I feel like my mom was such a good neighbor. She knew who we lived next to. She thought about them on holidays. She just checked in on them. And I'm wondering how far we can take that and what kinds of considerations maybe we should have now that we have maybe all gotten out of the habit of doing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So many of us have gotten out of the habit. You know, we arrive home, we pull into our driveways and go straight, pull straight into the garage and go into the house.
Yeah, maybe a friendly wave, maybe a nod, but maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a wave, a nod, good morning. You know, we're walking our dogs. It doesn't take much to just look up at the person, look them in the eye, and smile and say hello. Now, yeah. We can dig a little bit deeper, I believe, and try to make sure that we're really looking out for individuals. You know, sometimes we have, you know, neighbors who maybe live alone. There might be a person who's elderly or either a family who mm-hmm. may have, you know, children that have medical conditions or so forth. And so, you know, it's neighborly for us to be on the lookout for individuals just to be sure that they're okay. For example, if you see someone that walks their dog all the time in the morning or in the evening and a certain time and you just don't see them anymore, if you know where they live, it won't hurt to either walk by their home or even knock on the door and say, hey, I hadn't seen you in a while. Just thought I would check in on you and make sure everything was okay.
Oh, wow.
It's that sort of thing that we have to do so that we can protect one another and also fill that void that some people tend to have.
You know, I have to interject here and say that I have some really wonderful neighbors. And my husband was in a wheelchair for many years. And I had some neighbors that I didn't know very well come over and knock on my door and just say, hey, I know you guys are having a difficult, you know, kind of time. And I see that your husband is in a wheelchair and that you're making some home adaptations. Hey, I just wanted to let you know that if you ever need any help, I'm right there. Like, and the fact that they went out of their way to offer specific like help like that of like, hey, if he ever falls and you need someone to help you assist him getting back up, or if you need any help with your ramp or you know, with other equipment, I'm here and I'd love to help. Boy, that meant a lot to me.
It I'm sure it did. I'm sure it went a long way. You know, the thing here, Lisa, is we just have to put forth a greater effort to be more observant. For example, if you see flowers arriving at someone's house constantly over a very short period of time, more often than not, you'll know that that could possibly represent a sickness or death in the family. And so it's those sorts of cues that we can look out for, or pink, or you might even see pink balloons
right.
or blue balloons. You know, for our next door neighbor, one indication that we had that they had a brand new baby, which we were so shocked because I didn't even realize that mom was expecting. Somehow that just got past us, you know. But all of a sudden we saw these, you know, balloons hanging outside, and I thought, oh my goodness. So we, of course, went over right away and congratulated them, and then, of course, sent over a gift later on. But it's those little things that we can do to look out for. And, you know, I really want to make sure that we're also letting folks know, people who live in apartment complexes or apartment buildings, you know, you don't always have that great vantage point. You pretty much just
sure.
see the front door of someone else. But this is where we pay attention to those walk-bys or dog walking moments if pets are allowed in the building. You know, just anything different. You see something sitting outside their door. Maybe it's there for a long time. It's just we have to pay attention. We have to slow down mm-hmm. just a little bit and pay attention. It's really a very strong biblical principle, which is to care for our fellow man.
Yeah. For those who are listening and thinking, oh, you know what? I've gotten out of the habit of doing that, or I've lived in my place too long, but I kind of want to just get to know my neighbors, but I feel awkward doing so. What advice do you have for them to reconnect?
Oh, I think one really great thing is just ask the person's name. You know, just say, you know what? I see you so often. We always nod or say hello, but I really don't know your name. What's your name? So now, you know, when you see that person, you can call them by their first name. I would say that. Perhaps you might have something in common. You have, you know, maybe they have a pet or they have children or maybe similar cars or something like that. But this is where you can just say, hey, you know, we see each other all the time and I haven't stopped to say hello. How are you doing today? It really, that moment right there can really break the ice. And you never know the impact that it might have on that person's day. You know, it's this in this day and time, mm-hmm. the connection that we have with other people is vital to our well-being. And so anything that we can do to break that ice and open that moment for conversation is a good thing and can lead us in a great direction.
What advice do you have for those who kind of struggle to get along with their neighbors? Maybe there's been an issue before, like noise or a pet or something, I don't know. And maybe there haven't been just exclusively positive interactions. How do you suggest that we turn that around?
Well, there's two things you can do. Number one, if let's say, for example, the noise was a factor and you call the police on them or they call the police on you or what have you, and maybe because you were having a gathering. The next time you have a gathering, include your neighbor in two ways. You can go to them and say, hey, I just want to let you know that we are going to be having a gathering. I want to give you my contact information. Here's my phone number so you can call me directly. I don't want to disturb you, so here's my direct number so you can call me and let me know, and we'll make sure that we pay attention to it. The other thing you can do is to start to break break down that wall that's up between the two of you with everything along the lines from a glance, a look, a nod of the head, a wave. Just start to do those sorts of things until over time that turns into a hello or how are you doing today. But just allow some time and space kind of in between that bridge, put a bridge in between it, and it can just start with very simple gestures that will eventually turn into a hello, and then that hello can turn into a conversation. And you never know what a person may or may not have been going through during the time that you all had a bit of conflict.
Now, Dr. Swan, you are known for founding the Swan School of Protocol, and as an etiquette expert, you've really given us some really great advice on how to interact with our neighbors and to become more well acquainted. But now I'd like to turn our conversation to really the benefits that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation that it can have for our kids and our parenting. So Elaine Swan, as a etiquette specialist and a public figure, you know, you are really a great person to talk to about how to have good manners really with our neighbors in lots of different situations. But I'd love to turn our attention and the conversation towards how this impacts our kids and our parenting skills.
It really does have a very, very profound impact on our children, their well-being, and how they see the world itself. And it most certainly carves out a path for our parenting skills. And what I mean by that is that our children have to see us behaving kindly towards others. It teaches them how to be proper citizens in the world. The way we behave in the presence of our children has an impact on how they show up in the world as citizens. We cannot tell our children to be nice while we're being nasty towards our neighbors. We cannot tell our children to respect other people, whether it's ourselves, their siblings, their teachers, their extended family members, when they witness us being rude and disrespectful or even confrontational towards our neighbors. And so this is where we have to keep in mind that as our children are watching us, as they are growing, they are taking note of who we are as parenting. And so we have to recognize that our parenting skills not only come from what we say, but those skills and the teachings come from our children observing what we do.
Yeah. Our actions being louder than our words.
Just absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Sometimes when we think we're being a good neighbor, we may inadvertently offend someone else. You know, an act of service that one person considers kind and generous may not be for someone else. Like, you know, I remember one of my neighbors years ago, some kids in the neighborhood thought it would be really great to mow her lawn and, you know, rake up the leaves. They didn't know that she wanted to have those leaves down and mulch because she was planting something else, like a vine. And so she came out saying, "No, please don't." And it ended up being this big misunderstanding. How can we avoid situations like that and still do spontaneous acts of service?
Oh, gosh, poor thing.
I know.
They probably felt proud of what they had done.
And she was so generous about it. She really was.
But a mishap. But
yeah.
One of the ways to avoid that sort of thing is to ask first. You know, whether you knock on the door or leave a note on the door and you can say, "Hey, you know, little Bobby can leave a note, or mom or dad can leave a note, or check with the person and say, this is what they're thinking of doing. Is it all right with you?" And that's one thing we always have to make sure, that whenever we do, assist a person in some way, form, or fashion, if you don't have the full story and you've kind of created a narrative in your own head, check with the person first. So just ask them and see if it's all right with them. And if you do happen to do something, maybe you see the flowers being delivered at the house and you're thinking, "Oh my goodness, there must have been sickness or death in the family," and you go to the house thinking that and come to find out really they were just being showered in love by someone else. Just simply apologize and let them know that you're glad it all is well, and then move on.
For those who are listening who are maybe a little cynical or just didn't grow up or live in neighborhoods where you knew your neighbors or you talked to them, what is the benefit of going out of your way to be a really good neighbor?
The benefit of going out of your way to be a really good neighbor is to allow yourself to be accessible and comforting in someone else's time of need. You know, too often we think about how things can benefit ourselves, but just, you know, really think that the age-old saying of "do unto others as you would have them to do unto you" is really, really a core value that we should adopt and have as part of our lifestyle. Imagine being in your house and, you know, perhaps, unfortunately, there's some sort of accident, and it's your neighbor that happened to check in on you to make sure you were okay. Or even think about the loneliness that someone else might be experiencing, or the turmoil that someone else might be experiencing. We cannot walk through this life only thinking about ourselves and our own families. It's so important for us to get out of our own head and out of our own home and really show kindness and care and compassion towards others. It's a vital principle in the circle of life, is to look out for each other. I mean, even the animals do it. We can sit and watch Animal Kingdom, and we see the animals looking out for one another. So as human beings, we should do the same for each other.
Thank you so much for being here today, Elaine Swann.
It was my absolute pleasure.
Elaine Swann's the author of the book, Let Crazy Be Crazy, and is currently working to train others to become certified etiquette consultants. For more information, you can visit swannschoolofprotocol.com or elaineswann.com. Thank you so much for your time. Okay, now, when was the last time something made you radically rethink how you see your home? Well, we're going to bring up something a little bit radical coming up next.
Wow, radical?
Yeah.
Cool, dude. Oh, not that kind of
not
radical.
That kind.
All right. Oh, also, an anniversary that should never be celebrated this way. Ever. Ever. That's coming up in your morning buzz. You're listening to The Lisa Show.
Welcome back to The Lisa Show. Have you tried taking the color code personality test? Well, in 20 minutes, we're going to tell you how it can help you uncover your core values as a person. An interesting conversation. But first, we got your morning buzz with Richie T.
It's three things that are trending online right now. Things that folks are talking about. You know, I've heard in big tech companies, they're projecting water cooler talk by the end of the year.
Okay.
Some companies even at 10%. 10% water cooler talk.
Wow.
That's where you just go, hey, and the other person says, hey, and then you walk away from each other. We'll get back to 100%. These three things trending online. Marty Short, you know, a young Martin Short. This is trending on YouTube. I can't figure out why.
Okay.
It's Marty Short on the Johnny Carson show impersonating Betty Davis, among other people. I don't know why this is trending, but it's like number 9 or 10 in
really?
YouTube today.
Huh.
It must have been referenced somewhere, or there must be something going on with Martin Short. Forgive my ignorance that I don't know. I was pleasantly surprised. It's, you know, 10 minutes of a young Marty Short. Actually, it's his first time on the Johnny Carson show, and it's just Johnny Carson laughing the whole time. Kids, ask your grandparents who Johnny Carson is. if you know why that's trending, email me. I would be curious. The Lisa Show at BYU.edu. Also, the U.S. Navy is confirming, those unidentified flying objects, that's real video. We don't know.
What?
We don't know what that is.
They said it's real video and we don't know?
Exactly.
Wow.
There's video that is out from July of 2019. The Pentagon and the U.S. Navy has said, that 18-second video, we took it and have no idea what those objects are. The objects keep pace for 90 minutes with one of the Navy's destroyers off the shore of San Diego. And they have no idea what it is.
That's a little unnerving.
Yeah, conspiracy theorists unite.
Uh-huh.
Guys, we've got proof. 18 seconds of Pentagon confirmed proof.
Crazy.
And then finally this. You never want to celebrate an anniversary like this. HBO has said, Game of Thrones began 10 years ago. Let's celebrate. And fans said, please redo season 8. And now there is a petition.
Try again.
There is a petition for them to scrap the season 8 that they did, which was 6 episodes. Normal Game of Thrones was a 10-season episode. Fans are saying, just get rid of what you guys did in your 8th season. Let's do a complete different one. It was the anniversary that HBO never wanted because they have put a considerable amount of money being like, guys, it was 10 years ago that we started
Let's
and
celebrate.
Then isn't this great?
Rewatch
and people are like, terrible, terrible ending.
And they just are like, it's an anniversary to remind them you didn't do a good job.
Yeah.
Ouch.
We'll give you a redo. Happy anniversary. In fairness, I've had several anniversaries like that personally where it gets to the end of the anniversary and the spouse goes, hey, can we do that again? I'll give you a redo.
Oh, really?
I'll give you a redo. You want to try that whole thing again? Maybe that was too personal. That's your morning buzz.
Thanks, Richie T. Okay, so there is a little bit of a controversy going on that you don't know about that I feel like you need to be aware of. Well, especially with your particular skill set.
Well, I am a fan of a controversy, as you know. So fill me in so that I may get enraged and take to the internet.
Apparently, over in Britain, you know, across the pond, as they say.
Now, didn't you live there?
I did. So I have a love for a lot of things, you know, English, of course. Mm-hmm. There is a new movement, which isn't actually pretty new, but maybe a resurgence, called rewilding. And I wondered if you, I wanted to bring your attention to it.
Okay.
You look, I wish everyone could see your face right now. You look confused.
So when I hear terms, I try and break it down as like, okay, just based on the word of the term, do I know what this is, right?
Yeah.
Like, so rewilding, I hear that and I think, okay, something that has been like domesticated and we're setting it out in the wild. So I'm thinking rewilding is probably like our pets or our children. We're not going to keep them in the walls of our home. We can send them across the pond to rewild.
I think that would be even more controversial. No, what I'm talking about is what everyone is buzzing about across the country, which is your lawn, you know? So there is this movement and kind of like two different camps, and I've seen it in different parts of the country as well, and I'd be curious to see what most Americans think about this, of the idea of having like a green suburban lawn, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So you're
a fine pattern etched in by a sharpened blade of a lawnmower. Yep.
Your grass is green. It's mm-hmm. cut short, mm-hmm. right? You've got clean edges. Some enthusiasts, and certainly in our home, growing up, it was important to have like a nice, good lawn. But like with my husband and his family, it was like, which way do you mow?
Mm-hmm.
You mow vertically and then you mow horizontal, like you get the grid look, like
yeah.
that kind of attention to detail and having it look a certain way and manicured is one camp, right? Mm-hmm. And the next camp is this idea of rewilding. They say you just let your grass grow longer. It's better for the environment. It looks long and unruly, but there are lots of benefits. And they say the benefits are like, you know, it draws down the carbon emissions and it helps wildlife adapt better. And it reverses biodiversity loss and for the health and well-being. So people are saying, listen, the way that we've been doing things, this is a radical idea, right? Mm. Like we have this idea.
I'm reserving my comments I make sure I understand the whole concept.
And it is not great for the environment, not great for us, because we're all connected. We know that we're connected to the bugs and the creepy crawly things of the earth and the mm-hmm. animals, mm-hmm. and that we are losing a lot of these things. And then other people on the other side of keeping, you know, a nice, good, clean, trim lawn are saying, what are we, animals?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We are civilized. This is order. It's not that much yard. Like, it looks better. It increases your, you know, the home value. It looks nice. It's not that bad. So this is something being discussed in Britain a lot. And what I've noticed here, especially as
hair is on this side of the pond.
Yes, I wanted to say that. Across the country is that as people are going to their local gardening store, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm. and looking, saying, okay, now what do I need to put on my lawn to fertilize it, to keep it green, to keep the bugs out, you know, all of the different concerns that we have, maybe like, I would say mostly like in suburban or urban kind of areas,
right,
about having it look a certain way. Maybe we need to drastically rethink why it is that we do what we do.
So when I hear things like this,
are you sweating?
This is what
you're very uncomfortable.
This is what I think of. I think, are our behaviors changing? And then we're looking for justification for our behaviors.
Which came first?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
Like, I'm on board, perhaps, if the idea really was a large group of scientists came together and said, you know, guys.
Yeah, this is what we need to do.
If we can grow our lawn out a little bit longer, we'll reduce our carbon emissions by such and such. And, you know, the grass can devour this much amount of carbon monoxide and produce this amount of oxygen. And the bugs fab their natural, you know, environment. Boop, 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 boop. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe. I'm giving it a hard maybe as far as that goes.
Okay.
But what I fear is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Is where it's like, yeah, I don't feel like mowing my lawn. What can we call this? Can we call this something?
Well,
can we call it rewilding? It reminds me, and I'm being serious, about a decade ago, there was a, I think it was called Going Animal. Do you remember this?
I don't.
This was the idea that you shouldn't use soaps or shampoos or conditioners,
that
you should just use water to clean your body. And that your body, if you allow it to get to that animal state, would take care of any sort of scents and any of those things that, that would linger on it. So the idea was going animal was better for your body, better for your skin, and all of those things. And at that point, I went, what are we doing here?
Right.
Right. Like I could also justify, like, my clothes, right? I could wear the same clothes every day, and I'm saving my creativity for other areas of my life, and it's clothing sustainability, and I'm on board for all of these things, right? I'm on board for all of these things, but there is a point rewilding just becomes didn't want to do my yard work.
Yeah. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the Lisa Show, it should be noted here that Richie has a great love of taking care of his lawn and his neighbor's lawn, whether they ask him or not, mostly when they don't ask him.
Yeah, no, never have asked
you me. You are good at, you know, hey, my neighbor maybe Dad doesn't have time to mow his lawn. I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe my neighbor doesn't have time to trim or prune these fruit trees. I'm going to go ahead and take care of that for her.
You know, I am the best worst neighbor ever.
And rethinking the way that you have always done something, in this case, taking care of your lawn, could have dramatic mental health consequences to you.
So I wonder if we can make a compromise. Maybe that's the lesson that we can learn from this, where there are those among us who would like to be, air quotes, going animal or allowing their yard to be rewilding, and others who, air quotes, function well under a system.
Yes.
No fingers being pointed towards any other radio hosts, Lisa Valentine Clark.
It's fine. I know who I am.
But maybe we adopt the mullet style of care for our yards and our lives.
Oh.
That being business up front and party in the back. Right, we keep our front facing yards.
I've never thought of the mullet compromise.
Yes,
but I think I'll allow it in this case.
That's
a good idea.
We keep it nice and business up front.
Yeah.
What a clean neighborhood.
Yeah.
What fine
Put
lines
together.
We have here. That is well kept.
I will say that as I look at my garden and I think and my lawn, I don't want, you know, those dandelion seeds and the weeds blowing over into my yard, you know, and I know that is what a lot of people say of like, hey, when I take care of my yard, it's a benefit to everybody else, right? Like it makes it that much easier for them to maintain a good lawn. But in kind of doing some research about this idea of thinking, okay, yeah, how can I incorporate this? I like you, need to find a system that soothes my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the mullet,
mm-hmm.
business in the front, party in the back, you know, and maybe the backyard is where to do a little bit, you know, different.
Just let it go.
But it's not let it go. This rewilding and
there's
I do
more to
there's more to it and I wanted
I have
to tell
to
you
control rewild okay this no. is not this is
no,
not
I'm saying
wild means wild it doesn't mean controlled and sustainable
no but you can't just not care it then it looks unintentional and you know that is my word right like I want things to be done intentionally and I think that when you actually have that put forth an intention and then fulfill it it feels less crazy or you know than just whatever anything goes because to your point earlier, too, you were saying, you know, what is this? You just don't care. It's just lazy. It's not that. Mm. It's actually pretty intentional. So here are just some ideas that I found online. All you have to do is take a step back and relax your mindset.
Mm.
Don't get too caught up. Okay, so that's step number one.
Okay,
Take a deep breath.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see you're getting really worked up about this.
Mm-hmm,
so, and I think that this is good for all of us to remind us. You know, I think the weather starts to get nicer across the country and we start to panic like we have been in quarantine. We have been shut in for so long. This is our chance to get out, right?
Yes.
And I think we're going to make a lot of mistakes because we're going to, you know, kind of stumble out of our homes because we're a little too excited. We just got to take a step back.
Okay.
Take a deep breath.
All right.
And then
this
another thing that you can do is just to plant the right way where you are looking at the plants that you're planting in your flower beds or, you know, in the front or whatever. Make them insect friendly. That's one thing you could do.
Yeah.
You know, instead of
I'm a big fan of that, actually. The things that attract the pollinators, being
yes,
very
that's
intentional.
What I'm, yes. Yeah.
Trying to get the bees in your yard because they just help everything grow, especially vegetables.
I like that. So if you're trying to grow something new this year, like just think about the insect friendly plants. And if that's overwhelming to someone like me that, you know, doesn't know a lot about, well, what are they and which ones will grow well in my soil where I live? And you just go, that's why you go to your local nursery, right? Because that's full of people who know, hey, this is going to grow well.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm really excited about doing like things that conserve water because I live in a dry area. And you can do that no matter where you live in the country. Just look for plants that were and are natural to your area and plant that. See, it's a system of unsysteming.
Yeah, and if you don't want to go to that local garden center, there's a cool website that I know about where you can find out about what you can plant. You can type what you can plant into Google and it will let you know what you should plant in your area or what pollinators are. It's new, so if you have
if you haven't
heard of it, there's that there.
There's the last kind of idea that when I was looking into rewilding, like, this is too crazy, I could never do it, that just gave me pause to sort of rethink the way that, you know, we're all doing this in suburbia, is to think about birds and planting or putting up bird feeders and allowing that sort of nature to come in and be a part of your space, no matter how big or small that it is. And that kind of made sense to me in the sense that no matter where we live, we're all just trying to, we want to be kind to Mother Earth, and we're all a little super excited to get outside and to take care of our little plot of land, wherever that is, even if it's just a little flower box, you know, on a porch, you know, that there are things that we can do to encourage that.
I'm going to insist. I love all of these tips for rewilding, but I'm going to take it one step further to personalize it for me.
Of course.
As we would hope anyone who listens to the Lisa show says, I'm going to take what is beneficial and then I'm going to leave the rest. I'm going to trigger my back door that leads to my backyard, because I think I am going to do this sort of mullet yard style, right?
Cool,
so it's business up front and party in the back. I'm going to trigger an alarm so that when I go out my back door towards my backyard, you open the backyard and you go, just as I walk into the backyard, rewilding. Try it. Try it for yourself.
Try it today. Now, coming up, we're going to tell you how a personality test can help you understand people that are different from you.
Don't look at me.
I have to.
You are listening to The Lisa Show. Welcome back to The Lisa Show.
Every day we're creating or nurturing relationships with friends, family, or romantic partners. But not all relationships are created equal. Some people are just easier to connect with. But why is that? Many times this understanding comes from simply knowing who we are and what we value. So how do we know what we value the most? The Color Code Personality Assessment helps us pinpoint the core values in ourselves and in others. And joining us today is Color Code training expert Jeremy Daniels to discuss the Color Code and how it can help us understand different personalities in a very simple way. And hopefully make a lot of better connections. Welcome, Jeremy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so for those who are not familiar, what exactly is the color code?
Great question. The color code is a personality assessment. And a lot of folks are familiar with other tools on the marketplace like the MBTI, the Myers-Briggs, mm-hmm. the DISC, Enneagram, etc. Color code is another personality assessment. We just have a different methodology.
Okay, and so what is your methodology?
While most other assessments that you're going to experience in the world, and I mean, I take them all, by the way.
Right,
I love
I know.
Personality.
It's kind of addictive, isn't it? Tell me more about myself.
Totally.
Right.
Oh, yeah. What dog breed am I? Oh, I want to take that. I want to take that quiz. Yeah. I'm a golden retriever, by the way.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. So I do all of this. But what makes the color code different is that we are not a behavioral instrument. And what I mean by that is that all of these other assessments that you've probably experienced, they ask you questions to determine what you do. And then based on those behavioral patterns of what you do, they will put you into a personality classification. So it's all behavior based, right?
Mm-hmm.
The difference in the methodology with the color code is that we are really not so interested in what you do. We want to know why you do it. And so we are a motive based tool. We ask you questions to really get down to identifying what we call your driving core motive, which we believe is the base of your personality. We believe that driving core motive influences the way that you think, the way that you feel, the behaviors that you adopt, and so on and so forth. And so the driving core motive or why you do what you do is we feel it's much more significant, because if you understand a person's why, then you can really connect with them in much more meaningful ways.
So how long has this personality test been around, and how is it primarily used?
It originated with Dr. Taylor Hartman. He's the creator. He is a psychologist, and he created this in about the mid-80s, and we use it for a variety of reasons. We still have people, obviously, that use it in a situation where somebody might be experiencing therapy, but we, especially on my side of the business, we use it a lot with companies and in team-building situations and leadership development kinds of arenas where we want to be able to help team members communicate and collaborate more effectively. We want to help team leaders create the kind of environment where their people feel productive, connected, drama-free, happy, et cetera. And so we really want to create highly functioning teams where the relationships within those teams just flow very naturally. And then, of course, people use this in their personal lives as well, you know, with their significant others, with their children. Parenting is a very popular application of the color code. It's used in so many different arenas, even in sales and things of that nature. So anywhere where people are trying to figure out better ways to connect and communicate, where we're trying to get over that, you know, sometimes I think you mentioned in the introduction, sometimes you're fast friends with people, just immediately you feel like you've known each other forever. And then sometimes, no matter how long you work together or no matter how much effort you put into it, it's just frustrating to figure out how to make that relationship work. Any of those situations, the color code can really help out with.
Okay, so how many different colors or personality types are they? Can you walk us through the traits?
Of course, yeah. There are four that we use in the color code. And sometimes people go, only four? They're like 7-8 billion people on this planet. But, you know, it's kind of like the human face. There are only a few basic elements, but we all look a little different, right? So no two reds, blues, whites, or yellows. Those are the four colors that we use to describe our personality styles. None of them are exactly alike, one from another. So yes, we do have the four, red, blue, white, and yellow. And the colors, by the way, Lisa, mean nothing at all.
Okay, so they're not synonymous with any traits or anything like that.
Right. And sometimes people go, does it mean I look good in the color red or I like the color blue? No, not really. The colors are just a metaphor to help us remember what the driving core motive is. So reds are motivated by power. Blues are motivated by intimacy. Whites are motivated by peace. And yellows are motivated by fun. Now, you can have a secondary color as well, or even a tertiary color. And so, again, every red is going to look a little bit different and a little bit unique, obviously. But those are the four primary driving core motives. And the driving core motive really is the most important thing to understand. And so I'll give you a quick definition so people know what that means.
You bet.
Okay? Okay, great. So power. It doesn't mean they're power hungry. It just means they want to get from point A to point B in the quickest, most efficient way possible. So think of them as your type A personalities. They are focused. They're driven. They're motivated. They're visionary, right? Sometimes they can be overly aggressive. Sometimes they can be bossy. Sometimes they can be insensitive. So we do always talk about strengths and limitations. We don't talk about weaknesses because...
limitations is your word of choice. Okay.
It is because I don't want people to feel that they're weak, and there's no color that's better than or worse than any other color. And limitations are simply obstacles. And if we can overcome those limitations, we can be even better. So we value the gifts that each of these personality styles bring to the table. And that's really for anybody, no matter what application you're in, whether it be personal or business related or what have you. The first step to growth really is learning to value who you are, right? So when people say, oh, I used to be a yellow, but now I'm a blue, mm-hmm. it really sends up a lot of like red flags, pardon pun. But, you know, I start to think through like, well, who convinced you that being yellow was
Oh, that's okay. Interesting. That's an interesting qualification. So there's not a lot of judgment, it sounds like, I'm hearing from what you're saying, in what color you are or what that means, even if it changes. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And in fact, your color doesn't change over the course of time. And that's
it doesn't. How do you know?
Well, because it's your driving core motive. It's really kind of part of your hardwiring. Your behaviors can change. This is, again, where we get back to this behavior versus motive thing, right? If you're a red, you can learn the behaviors of a blue or a yellow or a white. And you can exhibit those behaviors. And you might even look like a blue or a yellow or a white. But it doesn't mean that you're no longer red.
Okay. All right.
Driving core mode is still intact.
So you talked about the strengths and limitations of the reds. What about the other colors?
So the blues, the motive is intimacy, which means that they want to connect with people on a deep and meaningful level. And that's really important to understand about blues, is they genuinely like to connect with people. They might not be able to have a deep and meaningful connection with every single person in their life. There's probably just two or three that they feel really, really deeply connected with, but they do believe in treating people well. And so they have a lot of integrity. They're very genuine. They're sincere. They're caring. They're compassionate. They're thoughtful. They're the ones that are shopping for Christmas in July because they have to get the perfect gift, you know, because that has to mean something.
It's a very specific example. And I'm here for it. I love that.
Yeah, that's how they are. And because it's a very personal thing. It's about connecting. Limitations-wise, they can be very worry-prone. Sometimes they say that's their worst limitation because they're worried about their jobs, their careers. They're worried about their finances. They're worried about their children. And then they see the way the next-door neighbor's children are dressed. And they go, oh, great, now I got to worry about the Johnsons, you know, and it's like they take off and global warming and the pandemic and all of these things. And so they can get very bogged down and worry. They can be a little bit emotionally intense. They can be judgmental. They don't really like that about themselves, but they have a really strong moral compass of what's right and what's wrong. And if you are not in alignment with what they think on that, then you might feel like they're being judgmental or they're being self-righteous. So that's just a little sampling, right? Then you have the white personality style, and they are motivated by peace. And what would you think that the definition for peace would be, Lisa?
I always think of peacemaker, wants everybody to get along, a lack of conflict, doesn't like to ruffle feathers.
Sure. And I think that's where most people go. I think logically that's where people go. And so that's kind of an external definition for peace.
Okay.
I think for the whites, they're looking for more of an internal definition of peace, which is to remain calm even in the midst of chaos and conflict.
Oh, okay. That's an important distinction.
Yeah, it's about inner harmony, inner balance. And so that's what peace means to somebody with the white personality style. And so what you'll typically find are human beings who are just very, very kind. They are accepting of other people. They are open-minded. They are the best listeners by far. And they also are very inventive. They're highly logical. They don't get hung up on the emotions or the opinions. They kind of sift through that, and they've got great clarity. On the limitation side, they can be indecisive, though. So, you know, on one hand, you can be very, very open-minded, but then making a specific decision can be difficult. You ask them where they want to go to lunch, and they say, I don't care. Where do you want to go to lunch? Right. And it's, then you get into that whole thing. Well, do you want tacos or sushi? And they're like, well, the tacos are good for this reason. And I really like the albacore, the sushi place. And they can't make the decision. So that's one thing that can be frustrating with somebody with a wide personality style. They can be a little bit more timid as well, a little bit more unmotivated because they're very content with what they have. So that's, anyway, brief description of the white.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the color code personality science with Jeremy Daniel, who is helping us to understand not only how this personality test works, but how we can use it. Okay, so we have defined three of the four colors. We're left with yellow. What are their primary characteristics?
You know what? And the yellows love that they're coming into this laugh. They're like, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. Here I am.
I just played right into their hands.
They love you for it. They love you for it. Yeah. So yellows are motivated by fun. And fun is deeper than it might sound on the surface. It's not just life is a party constantly. It's not just endless frivolity and irresponsibility. What's the yellows? They want to live in the moment. They want to enjoy what's happening right now. And so they tend to be very highly engaged. They're all about the process, right? The journey versus the destination is what yellows want. So they're persuasive. They're very gifted verbally. They're happy people, typically. They wake up every day happy, no medication required. It just happens. They are spontaneous. They're charismatic. They love people, and people tend to love them back. And they're very, very positive. They just never give up on thinking that there could be a positive opportunity or outcome. Now, on the limitation side, they can be, you know, when the spontaneity goes a little too far, it can come across as being impulsive. And they can be irresponsible, and they can be uncommitted. It's like, I know I said I was going to do that, but this other thing is coming up, and so I'm going to do that instead, and maybe I'll get back to you later. And they could be a little flaky like that, you know, just what's the best offer that's available at the moment. And so that can be frustrating for people that are working with yellows. And they also tend to be a little bit more disorganized mm-hmm. as well.
I'm laughing because I love these descriptions, and I'm sure everyone listening can say, oh, nope, you know, there's one that stands out. Do you think that people just instinctively know which color they are, or do you need to take the test?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes, especially if they're more of a purist, which means you score really high in one of the four categories, you can pick it out almost immediately. And sometimes, though, if somebody has a secondary color or even a strong tertiary color, it's really easiest to take the test because that will sort it out for you. So sometimes you could have, like my wife, for instance, she's like 51% red and 49% yellow. That's pretty close.
Wow.
And there are moments where she can be really, really yellow, and then there are moments where she can really be driving hard as a red. And so for somebody like that, I mean, she's a little bit more clear that I'm red, but for somebody else who might be really close like that, it can be hard to distinguish between which is the core and which is the secondary.
Okay.
So I would definitely recommend taking the test. It's free. You can take it at colorcode.com, and it only takes about 15 minutes.
Are there any colors that work better together, like in different relationships, like for a romantic relationship or for the people that we work with?
Yeah, I could talk about that subject all day, but
I know, me too.
Briefly, I would say that just if you were to strip away all of the that's a hard question to answer because there's so many layers to a person, and personal preference comes into this, and your upbringing comes into this, and whether you have a secondary color comes into this, and what have you learned over the course of your life comes into this. So with the color code, we are talking about, again, the hardwiring. In fact, when you take the assessment, we ask you to answer the questions based on what you're like as a child, as opposed to what you're like today. Because we want to know more about your nature than your nurture. So nurture obviously comes into play. We have a second assessment called the character code, which talks about what you're like today.
Oh, but interesting.
To answer your question, if you were to strip all of the other things away, all of those extra layers away, I do think that naturally reds and whites tend to work pretty well together because they're both very logical thinkers. And reds really want to be decisive in driving and getting things done. In other words, the red wants to be in control, and the white is happy to follow. They're going to have
Makes
their
sense.
Opinion, and I don't want to make it sound that whites are weak by any means, but they don't need to be in the spotlight. So that relationship works really naturally very well. And also blues connected with white, or sorry, blues connected with yellows tends to work pretty well for the opposite reason, actually, because they're both more emotion based. And blues are a little bit more controlling, and the yellows say, yeah, that's okay, I don't need to make all the decisions. And so that tends to work really well.
I like to share just sort of anecdotally that when my husband and I were first married, we did the color code test. And he would say to me over the 25 years that we were married, oh, you're such a blue. You're such a blue, you know, kind of in a teasing way. But he was a yellow. And so we really loved how in the book it talked about that as the hand in glove sort of relationship, because we just thought, oh, yeah, this kind of works for our motives.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it does. It's a very natural connection. But any one of these four colors can have a great relationship with any of the other four colors. You just really kind of have to know the patterns and what you can and what you can't reasonably expect. And then, of course, you know, it's like they say, you know, you get out what you put in. And so understanding what the other person needs. I always talk about this in terms of the Golden Rule 2.0.
Okay.
You know, it's not necessarily about doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's really about doing unto others as they would have you do unto them.
Mm.
And if you can understand that, and if you can apply that principle, your relationships will flourish.
Well said. We only have about a minute left. Through your experience as a trainer, how have you seen the color code test benefit the people that you work with?
Oh, it's been transformative. I've had people in leadership workshops and company workshops that actually are so moved that they say that it changes their lives. So I think that when you learn the color code, it's such an easy framework to view your relationships through that you can almost immediately start to say, oh my gosh, that's why we get hung up on this issue or that issue, or that's why it feels like I'm speaking French when I'm talking to this person and I'm thinking I'm speaking perfectly clear English. And so you're able to just make some small adjustments, and they're not difficult. It's like when you're talking with a red, just get to the point, right? When you're talking with a blue, you know, make that connection first. And if people just understand a couple of tips on that, they can really, really transform the effectiveness of their relationships and eliminate lots of frustration.
Thank you so much for being here today and taking the time to explain the color code test and how we can use it to make the relationships in our lives flow a little bit more easily. Appreciate it, Jeremy.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Jeremy Daniels, the training director and training leader for Color Code International. If you want more information, just visit colorcode.com.
A super fun thing to do is to take the test and then tell everyone in your life what color they are.
And why.
And why. You know, you're a total yellow. You're you're a blue.
Could you be any more red?
Oh, there he goes.
It's so true.
Being blue again.
But it's fun.
It really is 100% what I feel like social media was designated for.
Yeah.
Those quizzes, those things that you can get your results and be like, you are this. I am this. What do you think?
Now, coming up, we're going to tell you what you can do to prevent your kids from getting addicted to vaping.
I'm a white red, by the way,
for those
that were curious. Very white
no,
and very
not.
Red on the color code personality. You're listening to The Lisa Show. We'll be right back.
Glad you're here. It's going to be a great day. Did you know that this is a thing?
What did we talk about that was that?
That made me feel all the feels.
There is a group hug coming here in just a minute.
That's amazing. Welcome to The Lisa Show. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark.
And I am Richie T.
Do you feel like you're always underdressed? Well, coming up in 20 minutes, we're going to give you some tips to make sure you're wearing your best for any occasion.
Unlatch the floodgates. Disneyland is open. Kind of.
Oh.
Please be patient. Disneyland is open. I'll tell you about that coming up in your morning buzz.
When was the last time that you saw somebody smoke a cigarette on screen or on TV? Maybe, you know, it's probably in real life that you've seen someone actually smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Okay. Well, you know, we know that it's bad for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that it has negative consequences and can included in that cause cancer.
Sure.
And so knowing the severity of it, I think that as socially, we've all sort of agreed of it's not a great habit. Mm-hmm. But what about vaping?
Well, I mean, when you talk to people who vape, they go, oh, it's much better than
right.
smoking.
It seems like it's different. Is it kind of a rebranding or is it just as bad? And maybe, especially if you are not used to, if you didn't smoke before, mm-hmm. it might not be something that you think much about. But vaping is increasing in popularity, and vaping can smell like cotton candy, right? It doesn't make your breath stink or your teeth yellow. And so people assume that is innocent. Is that true? Well, many people are ditching their cigs for e-cigs, and a large number of teens are following this trend. So what are the dangers associated with this, and will our teens survive this trend? Here to tell us more is addiction expert Linda Richter, and we're really glad that she's here. Thanks, Linda, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Do teens vape more than adults? What are the percentages?
Oh, sure. I mean, the answer is yes. And even though the rates have come down slightly among teens from their high a few years ago, data from as recently as 2020 from the CDC show that 20% or 1 in 5 high school students report vaping within the past 30 days, as do about 5% of middle school students.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, this may be an odd question, but I have to ask it. What is it about vaping that is appealing to teens?
Well, interestingly, the way vaping products were designed and marketed made them almost tailor-made to appeal to kids. Mm-hmm. They override most kids' general disdain and disgust for smoking that they learned from a great national public health effort that helped really turn the tide against cigarettes in younger generations. In the early stages of vaping, the companies quite brilliantly used really appealing ads and marketing techniques that were virtually lifted from the heyday of successful tobacco marketing. And they also used social media influencers, smart product designs, and those sorts of things to promote vaping. And once it caught on, kids started doing the marketing for them, sharing images of themselves vaping on social media, extolling the products with their peers, and even once regulators began to crack down on how the companies were able to target kids, mm-hmm. It just kind of already had taken off.
So what are the dangers then to vaping?
Oh, well, so there are many dangers to vaping. So the chemicals used to create the flavors are toxic for the lungs, and in general, when they first came out, people didn't really understand the risks of them so much, and they were just kind of satisfied with knowing that they can possibly be as horrible for someone's health as cigarettes. But now that they've been on the market for a few years, they've had a lot of research attention, and the findings are pretty consistent in terms of their risks to one's health. So aside from the chemicals that are in the vaping liquid, all of them contain nicotine, and in some cases now marijuana, and often in high doses, even higher than what you find in cigarettes. Nicotine hasn't been linked to cancer the way tobacco and many other ingredients in cigarettes have been, but it is harmful to the cardiovascular system, respiratory and lung functioning, reproductive health, and immunity, and it's also highly addictive. We know that people who vape, especially kids, become addicted to the nicotine are at least 4 times at greater risk of starting to smoke cigarettes. And a lot of the other ingredients, as I said, like the flavorings and all the components that make up the liquids, which turns into vapor, are quite harmful as well. They kind of they penetrate deep into the lungs when you inhale. They cause lung inflammation, cell damage, and reduced immunity to infections.
Well, Linda Richter, as an addiction expert, I appreciate you going over the dangers of vaping, especially when teens and maybe even some adults have some misconceptions about how dangerous it is. I would love to get your perspective now to turn to how we can approach our teens and have conversations about vaping.
Oh, sure. So the most important thing is to actually have the conversation. You don't want to just kind of close your eyes and hope for the best and avoid the topic. Instead, unfortunately, there are so many opportunities to kind of note the vaping in our surroundings. So what you want to do is look for those opportunities to discuss vaping with your child in a calm and reasonable way. You know, it could be when you're, you see a news story, an ad, someone vaping on TV or on the street or passing a vape shop. And in these conversations, you don't just want to lecture. You want to be ready to listen to their perspective, understand what it is they know and think about it, and really focus on the health and safety concerns rather than on threats and punishment. And another really important thing is that when you're talking with your kids or answering their questions, you really want to offer honest, accurate, science-based information rather than just trying to scare them. Kids have, you know, great resources to go to, some of which are accurate, some of which are not, but you really want to be the reliable resource for your kids and someone who they come back to time and time and again. You know, luckily, yeah, there's lots of great information out there for parents to access. My own organization and others have them, and it's just really important to have that accurate information to share with your kids.
A lot of that seems sort of preventative as we have those conversations with our kids before they might be introduced or before start vaping. If we happen to find out, oh, you know, as I'm going into my kid's room, I smell a different smell, or I think they might
you
be vaping,
or yeah, cartridge.
What does that conversation look like?
Well, if you do think your child is vaping, you don't want to just assume that it's a, you know, a harmless rite of passage or just a phase. It's really important to keep in mind that vaping is very addictive and it could be very hard to quit. And most people don't just grow out of an addiction or become bored with it. So, you know, the nicotine in these products is very high, very addictive, and we know how hard it is for a grown adult to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. So now imagine a young teenager trying to do that on their own. So what they really need is support and encouragement, and in some cases, counseling and professional help. And parents really have to address it the way they would any kind of risk or threat to their kids' health. You know, you have to resist the urge to lecture, yell, and punish, and really get right down to how can you support your child and help them get past this. Some kids could quit on their own with, you know, that kind of support, but some will go through withdrawal symptoms. And, you know, this is a kind of new phenomenon, and the research is ongoing. But for now, when it comes to kids, the recommendation really is counseling and support. And there are some really good online text messaging programs and online support programs that kids can use to help help them quit vaping. And there are similar ones for parents to help support their kids. But if a parent is concerned that their child is addicted and these sorts of resources are not really making a dent, they really should, you know, seek the advice of a pediatrician. The good news is that according to a recent survey by the Truth Initiative, which is an organization that does research in this area, 60% of young people who vape now say they want to quit. You know, the kids are on board. They've gotten the message that this is unhealthy, but unfortunately, many of them can't stop.
Now, this is alarming because of the way that it's marketed directly to children. And some states have put bans on flavored, you know, sort of vape juice. What other legislative measures are being done to stop that this kind of targeted promotion?
Right. The states and local governments have begun banning flavors in tobacco products, including vapes. And as of February 2020, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration banned flavors, with the exception of tobacco and menthol flavor, in all products that have these cartridges or pods, which are like the popular brand Juul. And this was definitely a step in the right direction, but there are a lot of loopholes in this regulation. And what we're seeing now is that other non-cartridge or pod-based products are starting to flood the market with lots of flavors, and they're appealing to kids. So these are things like disposable vaping devices that don't use these cartridges. And more recently, there are nicotine lozenges, patches, and gums that come in a huge broad range of flavors that are ostensibly marketed to adults as like an alternative to cigarettes, but these flavors are appealing to kids. And even more recently, there is now a new line of synthetic nicotine products that have hit the market. And these really circumvent the FDA regulations because the FDA only has control over products that come from the actual tobacco plant. And these are synthetic. So there's lots for parents to stay on top of.
And you mentioned making sure that we have good resources. Before our time is done with you, can you point some people in the direction of where they can get that good information?
Well, of course, I'll point them to my own resources, which, you know, we're the Partnership to End Addiction, and at drugfree.org, we actually recently put out a whole series of vaping resources for parents specifically. So if you just go on our website, drugfree.org, and look for vaping, you'll see a whole range of things from how to talk to your kids about it, what you need to know about it, from before a kid starts vaping to, you know, you're being concerned that they might be addicted and need help. So there's a lot there. And in terms of these kind of programs to help a child quit, and other resources, the Truth Initiative is another organization that has really great resources.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Linda Richter, a research psychologist and the director of policy research and analysis at the Center on Addiction in New York City. That website, again, is drugfree.org. Linda, thanks for being on the show with us.
Great. Thank you.
Now, next, as we start to emerge from our homes, we're going to more fancy occasions. How do you tell how formal is too formal? We're going to let you know coming
and
up next.
Disneyland is open. Please be patient. Please. I'll tell you about it coming up in your morning buzz. You're listening to The Lisa Show.
Welcome back to The Lisa Show. Are you planning on spending your Friday night at home with your family? In 20 minutes, we're going to tell you about the new movies coming to streaming services that will make the perfect family movie night. But first, we've got your Morning Buzz with Richie T.
It's three things that are trending online right now. This first one, a gunman opened fire outside and inside the FedEx facility in Indianapolis. That is in Indiana, main airport last night, killing eight people, wounding several others, and sending witnesses running before he took his own life. Police were called to the facility about 11 p.m. local time for what has become the country's deadliest mass shooting in the last 3 weeks. The names of the victims or gunmen were not immediately released. Today, Major League Baseball celebrates Jackie Robinson. It's Jackie Robinson Day, which commemorates the anniversary of Jackie Robinson's 1947 Major League debut for the Brooklyn Dodgers, which brought a belated end to the color barrier at the highest level of professional baseball. See your favorite baseball player likely wearing the number 42 in celebration of Jackie Robinson. So we celebrate Jackie Robinson Day. And I know, if you're like me at all, you have a hankering to get your hand on a Dole Whip or a churro. A Dole Whip, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You just want to get back into Disneyland. We know that for...
And a corn dog and a churro, please.
Yeah, and a pretzel shaped like Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
There's rides there, too, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
But Disneyland yesterday said, hey, you know what? Our website's open. You want to buy some passes?
Oh.
You want to come back?
Oh.
We think that maybe people will want to come back. Several people, and in that I mean in the tens of thousands, spent hours upon hours online yesterday trying to get back into Disneyland. You can do so now, but be prepared to wait. That is your morning buzz.
Thanks, Richie T. We can all agree dressing up for occasions can be very complicated. One person's idea of dressing up is maybe not another's, right? All you have to do is to go to a formal event. To understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, so to be very clear, we're talking about formal wear, because when you say dressing up, I conjure in my mind the idea of not wearing sweatpants or of putting on pants at all after the year we've had.
This is what I'm talking about. It's, you know, when you get an outfit request, right?
Uh-huh.
On an invitation. You know what? It took me a while to say that because I can't remember the last time that I got an invitation where it was like formal attire required.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, we all like to think, though, that our own personal style is good enough, right? High caliber quality. But when it comes to a lot of those formal kinds of events, it can take a lifetime to feel good in a look.
Mm.
Do you understand this kind of the difference that I'm talking about? And is this something that you even worry about?
Well, I think we both know it's something that I don't worry about altogether that much. But I think it's also something that between the sexes, I think there is more stress put on women. Maybe this is a generalizing statement, but like when I think of formal wear for men, it's a tuxedo, right? Or maybe like a nice jacket and a pair of slacks.
Right.
We don't have to worry about...
You don't have to worry about a team.
Yeah.
A team of people helping
you. Exactly.
Which implies more than one. Well, we thought this was an interesting idea of how do you dress for an occasion? So with us today is fashion consultant Hallie Abrams, helping us to address our formal wear questions, knowing that we are going to get out of quarantine soon, and we're looking forward to occasions to dress up for and to feel confident while we're doing it. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, I want to sort of set the tone. How does the way we dress influence how we feel?
Oh, I think there's a direct correlation, and I think there are a lot of studies that have proven that as well, especially from the last year that we've gone through in quarantine. I think a lot of people can relate to the fact that when you actually got up and got dressed for the day, even if you weren't seeing anyone or you're only seeing people via Zoom, you felt better. You felt more productive. And the way we dress truly is the first form of communication that we are having with other people.
I like that. The first form of communication that we have with other people. I think that really to acknowledge that the we're talking not just about what's on the outside, but that confidence that we feel on the inside.
Yes. And when those two are aligned, when the message being sent out is aligned with who you are inside, people's confidence shines. And I see it when I work with clients, you know, all of a sudden, when they feel great with what they're wearing, their shoulders are back and their chin is up and they're smiling and their true self is able to radiate out. So for me, that's the emotional currency of my job. I love it.
But I bet you get some pushback, right, where people are like, well, people should get to know me. I'm not what I look like on the outside. You can't judge this book by a cover.
I do think there is that pushback. My response to that is, and you were talking about that earlier, Lisa, about how it's harder on women than it is on men. I think newscasters are a great example of that, or women in the public eye. If a woman, if something is off in terms of the way she's looking, like it or not, people aren't hearing her message. When everything is aligned and harmonious, it doesn't mean that someone needs to dress as someone else. They need to be authentically who they are, but they can't not care. Because if you don't care, that comes across also, and then people pay attention to that, and they're not listening to your message. You're creating extra hurdles for them to jump over to get to the core of the message.
Okay, that's a really good point. Now, we queued this interview up as anticipating that things are going to open up, that we will have a chance to be together in person more than we have for a really long time. And anticipating that, thank goodness, if we are looking for some to dress, to flatter ourselves, to feel good, what are some tips or those secrets behind finding a flattering dress or a flattering suit?
Well, so I think there's two things. One is making sure that you're decoding the dress code for that event. I think that almost comes first before you talk about a flattering suit or dress.
Okay, so what do you mean?
So when we're getting invitations to events, some events say they're black tie. Some say they're black tie optional. Some say they're cocktail attire. Some say they're smart casual, you know, and then there's all those other funny things, country club casual, creative, you know, there's all these different things that go on with invitations. And knowing when an event has a dress code to it, you want to make sure that you are, that those are rules for that event. So you don't want to show up to a black tie event casually, right? There's a misalignment there. So I think first it's about decoding what the invitation says and then finding the appropriate suit or dress for the person for that occasion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So how do we understand what that means? It's just an assumption, isn't it? That everyone knows what black tie, cocktail, smart casual, and country club casual, what those all mean. Can you break them down for us?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So black tie is women in a floor-length gown and men in either a tuxedo or a suit with a tie, a black suit, a darker suit. Okay? That is black tie. I'm not going to go into, there's white tie, but I don't think many people are dressing other than
none of us are James Bond.
Royal Highness.
Unless James Bond is listening, and then
in which case, welcome!
That is awesome.
right? then cocktail attire is where men wear a suit and a tie, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a dark suit. And sometimes a tie is optional, and women can wear an above-the-knee hem if it's appropriate, or even a pantsuit.
Okay.
And I'm talking about, like, truly the rules. Obviously,
yeah.
There are different ways that people can interpret them. And then smart casual is sort of where that's that no man's land. It's like business casual for work.
Right. What does it mean?
It causes everybody a lot of stress. Yeah. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Oh, good. I'm not the only one.
And I think that when it comes to an invitation for an event, if you have the ability to ask the host what they're wearing, that will set the truest tone, because the host is the one that's putting the rules to the invitation. So if it's someone's wedding or a charity gala, the host knows. If it's black tie, they really do want people there in black tie attire. If it's black tie optional, it's a little more fluid. there's more options to it. If it's cocktail, so if you ask the host, if they're able to tell you, that really is the clearest and most direct way to find out.
Although a little bit of a pro tip, though, be careful in how you ask the host of the party, what are you wearing? Like, you want to make sure that you put that in the confines of, we're talking about the party. Otherwise, you might find yourself not invited to said party. I'm not saying I've done that.
Yes.
But I'm also not saying I haven't done that on accident.
Oh, dear.
Learn from the mistakes that I've made. We're talking with Hallie Abrams about formal wear, how we dress for a particular occasion. We've got one more kind of classification of what something means and how we would dress appropriately for it. And then I want to make sure how we can find those clothes that would really fit and flatter us.
So what was there was one more classification you
said?
Like
a country club casual? What does that mean?
Oh, again, that's one of those like words that people put on invitations that drives everybody crazy.
I'm like thinking of someone that's going to play golf.
Yep. Yeah. My polo shirt?
Right? I know. Yeah. A visor?
Yes.
A tennis skirt? I don't
know. Club casual means that it's not jeans, but that it is, it's not formal. It can be pants. It could be white slacks. It could be khakis.
Okay.
Collared shirt. And the other tip I would give is that very often all of these dress codes, if you listen to the actual words that are used, most of them have to do with the men's attire. So knowing what the man is wearing helps set the tone for what the women should be wearing. Black tie, cocktail, business casual, all of those really have to do with what the gentleman is wearing, and then that sets the tone of knowing what the coordinating women's attire will be.
That's the patriarchy.
Yeah.
In fashion.
I'm just decoding it for you.
Exactly.
So when you talk about then the other side of this, because so much is being said before we even say anything, we want to make sure that whether we're wearing that tuxedo or that formal suit or the floor length dress for the women or the above the knee hem, we want to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward. What are those things, those tips, any of those secrets that we can have so that we can look our best no matter what
and feel confident.
The occasion is.
Yes. So I think I always work with clients and say there are two tips that we need to work with first. This first one is going to sound sort of odd, but stick with me for a second. I like, especially for a formal occasion where you're going to be on your feet all the time, the whole night.
Yeah.
To start from the ground up. So start with the shoes.
Really?
If you are uncomfortable in your shoes, you are going to be – nobody's attractive when they're wobbling.
I just thought that was just the pain of a formal event, just wearing uncomfortable shoes.
Well, I mean, I am not suggesting that you wear your Nike trainers with your cocktail dress. So that's not what I mean. But on the scale of heels for women, there are some that are torturous
Sure.
I call them valet shoes. So you can almost valet your car, walk to the table, and then walk back to get your car valeted. Yeah. And that's about all you can handle.
Yep.
And those are not going to be great if you're at an event where you're going to be on your feet all night, chatting with people, dancing, having pictures taken.
Yeah.
You know, that's, it just doesn't work. So wearing your most comfortable heels probably is a better way to say it. And then the other tip is that both men and women should have their clothing tailored. It sounds really simple. We are not meant to dress off the rack. Nobody's body. We're not paper dolls.
Yeah.
So everything is not exactly the same. So there's a dress. You have to find a dress or a suit that is good enough and then have it tailored so then it becomes perfect for your body. So if you can get 80% of the way there, and it's not a matter of cost of the dress either. If you get a great dress at H&M or a suit and have it tailored for you, it's going to look better than if someone buys something at, you know, a designer, a Chanel dress or a Gucci dress or whatever designer name you want to put in there and doesn't have it tailored because it needs to be personalized to your figure.
How do you suggest that we really express our personalities by what we choose to wear?
One of the exercises I like to do with my clients is to have them create a style statement. And that is really thinking of, it's sort of how an organization would have a mission statement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So thinking about the things that you, that are important to you and that you want to project. So are you classic, modest, and fun? Are you minimalist, edgy, and artistic? You know, what are the words that sort of describe you? And then a lot of times going through Pinterest, again, for both men and women, that's really helpful to collect a board. So it can be Pinterest is the electronic way. In the olden days, we'd tear sheets out of our magazines that we liked, you know, or dog ear them. But look at the pictures of things that are appealing to you, not overthinking, oh, I can't walk in those heels or it's not going to look good on me because I'm short and that's long. Just what are the pieces that are viscerally appealing to you? And then take a step back and revisit it about a week later and see if you can find a common thread through the pictures that you pulled. And that often helps people define what those words are, because some of them should be the things that appeal to you.
Mm-hmm. But you have to know what you like.
And then some of them, yes, should also be the words that you want to project. So even if you really are casual, but you're starting a new job sort of field that's not casual, you might need to rearrange some of those words depending on where you are in your life. The other thing I like to remind clients of is that your style statement is not a blood type, so it does not stay with you forever.
Mm. Okay.
We are meant to evolve as creatures. So something that might have been your style, I mean, think about when I think about my haircut from high school.
Oh, same.
I don't want to still be wearing the same thing or having the same haircut that I did in high school.
It's not a blood type, Richie.
Listen,
right.
Today I am crazy, on edge, eclectic. That is the look I am going for. But who knows? Next week I may be something completely different. I love that you've talked about that you take on individual clients. We've been visiting with Hallie Abrams, who is the founder of The Wardrobe Consultant. You can find her online at thewardrobeconsultant.com. You can also find and follow her on Instagram as well as on Twitter. But you give a lot of great resources on the weekly for folks.
Yes, I have a weekly blog that publishes every Tuesday morning, and you can subscribe to that at thewardrobeconsultant.com, and it will come right to your inbox. And each week I try to tackle a question that is pertinent in my one-on-one styling clients. For example, last week, I don't know if you heard about the controversy that was happening on TikTok that skinny jeans for old ladies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And side parts. Yep. And yeah.
And side parts and the crying emoji. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something, I didn't take it on exactly from that stance, it was more about, are skinny jeans dead and can we still wear them? And if not, what are we going to wear instead, or what's the evolution? And it was funny, I got a lot of comments from readers and followers saying, I was just having this conversation with my friends. Were you listening?
Yeah.
Were you, you know?
How did you know?
So I tend to luckily have that very often, where things that I'm writing about are things that have come up with clients. So they tend to be very timely and very pertinent to most of my readers.
And if you want to find out if skinny jeans are in or out, you got to go to the wardrobeconsultant.com. Hallie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, guys.
Next up, we're going to talk about the shows that are coming to your favorite streaming services this weekend.
Getting you ready for the weekend, you're listening to The Lisa Show. Welcome back to The Lisa Show. If you listen for any length of time to The Lisa Show, you'll know that on Fridays, at this time, we like to do a thing called planning your couch sitting for the entire weekend. Now, we don't just talk about new shows and movies that are streaming on your TV services, but we do that. We also talk about things that you can deliciously eat, or maybe places you can go, things that because of the pandemic, they've moved online, but now we can enjoy them across the country, and we do it in sort of our weekend in review, our, hey, coming up, our put this on your calendar.
And it's exciting. Because you're looking for new things, and we've done the heavy lifting for you. That's what I always feel like is a useful gift, right? Uh-huh. Like, just tell me what's going on. So let's get right into it. Streaming releases that are new to Netflix this weekend. Dr. Bello, it's a Nollywood film about a doctor who enlists the help of a healer to save a young boy with cancer.
Into the Beat is a German romance musical about a ballerina looking to break away from her parents' expectations. Please let it be that she ends up in hip-hop. Please let it be.
Isn't that the Step Up or something?
Yeah,
like,
no,
there's all these dance movies, which I'm sure you could find online this weekend, too.
Which I have almost memorized in my
brain. Really?
I like the Step Up dance series.
Well, you're a dancer.
Well, sure. Sure.
Okay. Also, Rush with Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl star in the 70s F1 action film. Listen, it's two rival racers. They're pushing themselves to the breaking point. It's intense. Did I say Chris Hemsworth is in it?
I was just going to say, I appreciate that you tried to get to like the meat of what the movie was about. Like, we know, Rush, Chris Hemsworth, there, boom,
listen.
It's over. The zookeeper's wife, zookeepers in Poland, work with the resistance to save hundreds of lives during World War II.
Over on Hulu, Fly Like a Girl, which is a documentary about a group of young girls and women pursuing their passion for flying in a field that's really dominated by men.
Modern Persuasion is a 2020 interpretation of a Jane Austen classic about a businesswoman who has to face a failed relationship when her ex-boyfriend hires her company.
I always love a modern adaptation.
Me too. If I can get more,
you know,
Jane Austen,
yes,
into my life, yeah.
I can't tell if you're being serious or not. Because
no.
I'm being 100% serious.
I like to explore both my pride and my prejudice as
right.
I watch movies.
Well, maybe we've persuaded you to watch Modern Persuasion. Also, Songbird, which is a courier races against the clock to save the woman he loves in the middle of a COVID-23 pandemic.
Too soon, Songbird.
I know.
Too soon.
I wondered if you would say that.
Amazon Prime has Somewhere. This is a bad boy actor who receives a visit from his daughter while recovering from an injury and is led to reevaluate his life after making a connection with this little girl.
Okay, so you have some options to sit down and watch something. Take a deep breath, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're done, you're thinking, you know, I could eat. I'm feeling a little snacky.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One goes with the other is what I'm saying.
Yes.
You can't just talk about watching things and not talk about eating things.
What am I going to do? Not
I know.
Eat?
Exactly. So let us then, again, do the heavy lifting and plan this out and give you some inspiration of some recipes to try.
Can we say tempt your taste buds, please?
Okay. Well, I know you love the puns on the recipe blogs and websites and
of
things
course.
Like that. That could be yours.
Okay.
Okay. So for those who are still recovering from Easter candy, looking for a little detox, right? Like a little balancing the scales on the other side of healthier, you can try the best detox crock pot lentil soup from Pinch of Yum.
Hmm.
Nice and hearty, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. Cleans it all out, I bet.
Full of fiber and vitamins and minerals.
If you're bored of your go-to salad, well, why not try the asparagus chickpea quinoa salad from Two Peas and Their Pod.
See, you love that name. I know.
I love food bloggers.
And a fun recipe that can really take place as a main dish or a side dish is the Cajun smoked sausage fried rice from The Hungry Hutch.
I wish that that were my nickname. Who's that? That's Hungry Hutch.
Oh.
I'd have to wear flannel. That's what I feel like. Hungry Hutch. Mm, yeah.
Yeah, and you need an alliteration with your name, Richie.
And sometimes when I eat, all I do is just make noises.
Man, that's old Hungry Hutch over there. Sure enjoying that sausage.
For brunch, we're making monkey bread muffins from butter with a side of bread.
Oh, get it? Butter with a side of bread instead of bread with a side of bread.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Thank you for explaining it to me.
Well, I appreciate it when someone's philosophy is so clear in the title.
Sure.
Like, is there going to be butter in this recipe?
Yes. Yeah.
And for dessert, we can't wait to try the mini blueberry cheesecakes from Inspired by Charm.
Anything that you want to consider now, given this information?
Okay, so this information has my mind spinning because honestly, I'm completely caught off guard this weekend by the recipes, the food. I'm not prepared.
Okay.
I've got my mind on other things that I'm going to do this weekend, and so I've let the food part go. So I'm glad to have these. Those mini blueberry cheesecakes might be calling my name.
Yeah, I am a huge fan of monkey bread.
Oh.
So maybe I'll try those monkey bread muffins. That sounds kind of delicious.
Do you like the kind of monkey bread that has like the caramel sauce on it, or does it have to be cinnamon sugar?
Look at me.
Okay, caramel sauce. Got it.
Thank you. Thank
Sorry.
You.
Sorry, I apologize.
How dare you? If you're listening to for great podcasts, well, might we recommend, of course, The Lisa Show. It's two friends just having a good time. It's like you're listening in on their conversation.
Right. They're doing their best.
They
bless
bring
them.
In professionals from all different types of fields. But one thing you know is that you leave entertained, you leave educated, and you leave that show inspired. It's called The Lisa Show.
Another podcast to consider is Still Processing. Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham discuss all the aspects of today's culture and how they interrelate.
Also, Deeply Human. This is an exploration of human hopes, habits, and fears. I don't know if I would really like this or really get like drawn in and be like, oh, I am deeply human.
Well, it's very connecting, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Something that I've discovered is I've been so resistant to the algorithm saying, hey, if you like this, you might like that.
You don't know me, algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. Or don't listen in on me and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have discovered some podcasts and some really good music that way. So maybe that's my recommendation for this weekend is give it a try and maybe stumble on something that you hadn't considered that could be a positive way to sort of keep things fresh for your podcast or your music this weekend.
I like that. Yeah. Turn it over to the algorithm
just
this
see.
Weekend.
Just see with a discerning ear.
Hey, Al, play the that kind of thing.
A little bit. So when we're looking for ideas of things to do across the country, it's always a good idea to, you know, look outside of your home, especially during springtime. It's okay to go on a walk, right? It's okay to maybe socially distant, get together with somebody. There's some things that are still actively going on across the country. Now's the time to do it. Ramadan, the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, observed by Muslims worldwide as a month of fasting, prayer, reflection, and community, started this week. And we want to wish a joy to all those who are observing.
An opportunity for you to learn if you hear Ramadan and think, I don't know what that is. An opportunity for you to learn about it this weekend. Also, since spring is upon us, might I challenge you to do the following?
Okay.
Follow, do as I'm doing, maybe. Follow me, even if we wanted to go that far. Take the opportunity this weekend. Get yourself one of those big, like, lawn bags.
Okay.
You know,
I'm talking heavy like duty ones.
Like the hefty, hefty, hefty. Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy. Sorry. Advertising works on me. You have one of those big black garbage bags and take it and fill it full of stuff that you can take to the the thrift center this weekend. Fill up a bag.
Good idea.
You can do one bag.
You got to go through your closet anyway because you've got to transition from the winter clothes to the summer clothes. If you live in an area that has four seasons, if you don't, it's still just a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Spring cleaning.
And those bags are tough enough that it can be kids' toys that you know they haven't played with. Still perfectly good.
But pro tip, send the kids outside to play.
Sure.
Then do that.
Second pro tip, put the toys at the bottom and put your clothes on top of it. They see the toys on top.
Yeah, good idea. Also, today is National Eggs Benedict Day. So if you haven't had breakfast yet or you're planning on getting a breakfast for dinner, you know, situation going this weekend, celebrate this random holiday with a plate of eggs, Benedict, get the sauce. You're not going to regret it.
No.
I mean, it's always good, that hollandaise sauce.
Don't be a traitor to your breakfast.
Okay.
It's been
all right. Okay.
The Moon Tower Comedy Festival. Yeah, that's where I'll be going with jokes like that. It's the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas. It's taking place all month long, and as you expect, you don't have to be in the state of Texas to enjoy it. You can go to austintheater.org for more details. Who are performing each day?
Yeah,
I want to talk about books. May we talk about New York Best Seller books?
Sure.
The Hill We Climb by Amanda Gorman. This is the poem that was read on President Joe Biden's inauguration day by the youngest poet to write and perform an inaugural poem. It's called The Hill We Climb.
It got a lot of attention, and I think that there's a lot of pre-orders on this book,
so
it'll be a good one to check out. Also, The Red Book by James Patterson and David Ellis. It's the second book in the Black Book thriller series. It's about Chicago detective Billy Harney, who is investigating his own past.
And The Beauty of Living Twice. This is by Sharon Stone. Yes, that Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
The actress and human rights activist recounts her childhood difficulties and biggest accomplishments. It's called The Beauty of Living Twice. So all that being said, we've told everyone about the books and the TV and the things that you're going to eat and all the things. I would be curious as to what, Lisa Valentine Clark, you will be doing this weekend.
Well, my kids are super jazzed because I'm rebranding it. It's a spectacular spring cleanup day.
You better have a good sound. You better have a good soundtrack.
Oh yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Speaker,
that's a really
good
point.
Music motivates.
I don't have a huge yard, but I have a front yard and a backyard that needs to be taken care of.
Okay, you said spring cleanup, and I thought
house.
No, you're moving
outside.
Outdoors. Okay.
And I have given them 2 weeks' notice, you know.
So they can make plans.
Yeah, no, and I, like, get this off, you know, work, and this is on the calendar. And I said, listen, many hands.
Make light work, sure.
Many hands. So I've prepped them. I'm prepping with all of the equipment. I got to really like clean out all the rest of those dead leaves. I've started to cut some stuff back just to get it ready for Saturday to clear it all away. So it won't, you know, otherwise it would take me days by myself. Wish me luck. But I did promise lots of good food.
Sure. Well, I would. Yeah, that wasn't even a question.
Yeah.
Pro tip for the pruning.
Yeah.
Make sure that whoever you put in charge of pruning knows what is alive and knows what is just maybe dormant for the wintertime and hasn't yet come out in spring. Had my my stepmom come over to the house and give a hand. We did the spring cleanup last week.
What happened?
And I have a grapevine, and I also have a raspberry bush. Now, to her credit, she was trying to be very helpful. To her detriment, she destroyed our grapevine and our raspberry bush.
Do you have any pro tips for me, honestly, because I am that person that might cut back a little too much?
I mean, depending on, like, what do you got in the yard? What's in the Clark yard?
It's got some bushes and some hydrangeas and some
I think a good standard rule is, like, don't ever take more than a fourth of whatever, you know, whatever you've got. If you're like, man, I've taken a lot, don't do that. Hollowing out the center, I've heard in some cases, is pretty good. So you don't have a lot of like inner overgrowth, kind of air it out.
If it's dead.
Yeah. If it's dead,
cut
take it
off.
Out.
Right?
Yeah, take it out. Yeah. Yep.
But if it has buds on it, you still need to.
Yeah. Let it grow.
Okay.
Yeah.
But don't you need to cut it back a little bit?
I mean, depends.
All right, it's see, everything
this,
depends.
This is like, hey, so my kid, and I'm
know.
Like, well,
I
you know,
know.
Not
it's
knowing,
so true.
Not knowing at all the situation.
Listen, I've got a lot of enthusiasm. I'm going to make some mistakes,
sure.
but it's going to look clean. And I always figure if I kill it, I can plant something else.
Sure. It can grow back.
I mean,
sure,
that will ease my anxiety about just not doing it. You got to do something, right?
Mm-hmm. Plus, it should be good weather.
Yeah.
You can have a great time out on the back patio. You mentioned delicious snacks. I hope there is a giant meal that culminates at the end of it.
Oh, yeah. That someone else will be
barbecue.
Making.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can't cook and clean out the yard all day.
That's a good point. That's
Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure,
it's too much work.
Okay.
So we're going to go
like pizza,
like get a whatever they want.
Yeah.
See, this is what's so
whoever
fun.
Whoever's still left
this is
at the end gets to pick.
Kind of. Yeah, kind of. This is a pro parenting tip. So you get them motivated, but also keep them on their toes. Mm-hmm. Like if you say, oh, we're having this at da 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 da, and it's already on the smoker or whatever on the grill, then they just are like, well, it's not like she's not going to let me eat, right?
Right.
But if you get them talking about what they want, then they still work, right? So and it's conversation. So they can say, no, I want this. No, I want this. Yeah. And then they're motivating it because, you know, everything's possible, but nothing is for sure.
Oh. A life lesson from Lisa Valentine Clark. Everything is possible,
no,
but
I'm going to try to make it enjoyable. But that's a good pro tip, though, on the music.
Yeah,
I need
to
have a good playlist because we've got some speakers in the backyard. I can get that going. And so I'm excited.
Yeah, start it out. Now, if we want to get real technical, like you want to start like when you're just sort of rolling out in the morning. This is going to get real nerdy. Are you ready for this?
Yeah,
you can find all
I'm
this online, though, by the way. You want to start with your BPMs a little bit lower. That's beats per minute.
Oh.
So you want to go like 80 to 100 as you're starting to just warm everything up. But like when you really need
like an hour to push
through, you bump it up to like 120, 130, 140. And you can find playlists that have your beats. Yeah, just look up 120 beats per minute and then it'll give you a huge list of popular songs. 100% it does. Your jogging beats per minute versus your running versus your sprinting. It's actually a whole science of music that...
Well, I really didn't know this. Yeah. This is really, really helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. I, speaking of music, will be playing a wedding this weekend, and I'm actually pretty excited because restrictions here in our state have changed a little bit. And as I was doing kind of the last minute consultation with the bride and groom, they were under the impression that they were not going to be able to have dancing at their reception.
They just adjusted.
Yeah, they're coming in from out of state. And the last time they spoke to the venue, they were told, hey, you know what? Because of where we're at, because of all these things, this is not occurring. And the bride and groom both work in the medical field. So both are completely vaccinated. And most of their party who will be flying in also mostly vaccinated. But they still were under the understanding they have to be respectful of the place that they're at. Long story short, venue said, no, dancing is completely legal. And so now we, in the last waning moments before their reception, have been planning out the most epic party ever.
Oh, that's exciting. Look at all the happiness that you're going to be bringing to them.
Yeah, that'll be the entirety of tomorrow. Although I will say this, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So without getting too nerdy again, when people get married, there are sort of three songs as part of the ceremony.
Yeah.
There's the processional for the bridal party, which is everyone except for the bride. There is the bridal processional, which is the bride typically, or I guess traditionally it would be the here comes the bride, but no one does that.
Yeah.
And then the outgoing song is the recessional, which is, you know, typically like We Are Family by Sister Sledge or Celebration or, you know, something kind of upbeat and crazy. So I love when people do acoustic covers of songs. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember the sweet sentiment of what this song is. But it sounds a little more elegant because it's, you know, it's done acoustically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can tell with this particular ceremony that the groom got to pick one of the processional songs and that the bride
You can
got,
tell.
Oh, my gosh. The bride got to pick her song and the groom 1,000% got to pick the processional song. For the bridal party, because it is there's a band called System of a Down, which is like yelling screamo.
Oh no!
But in this acoustic version, it's like, well, this is very pleasant. This is a very moving thing, and no one will know if you don't know that the song is actually this like screamo sort of metalish song. You're just like, what a great
acoustic,
pleasant
song.
Oh,
that's funny.
And so I'm like, this is what this is going to be like. So. I'm pretty excited about that.
That's exciting. What did the bride choose? I'm just curious.
I want to say it's a version of Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley, which is by far the most common, but this particular version I had never heard before.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And then there are a calm, well, since we're talking about love, and I can tell how much you love love.
I do.
Their outgoing song is a song from Interstellar. I think John Williams is the one who did all the music for Interstellar, that movie. It's just a piano
musical
cover of one of the John Williams songs. So it will be the entirety of my Saturday. It's like a 10-hour wedding.
Wow.
Yeah. Ceremony and then cocktail hour and then dinner and then toasts and then dancing.
Wow.
And then a dessert that's seated and then another round of dancing. And so, yeah. I don't know what we were going to do if they weren't allowed to dance because it was still allotted to be that much time. Whatever.
Living on the edge.
Yeah.
And now it's opening up.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how everyone's Saturdays and time off is going to change now because of the vaccine and because of states lifting up. I don't want to be a nervous Nelly far as – oh, we opened too soon and it's all going to get shut down again and there's going to be another wave or a variant. I don't like to go there, but I like to look for opportunities to be excited when it presents itself. So that's how I see it, working outside in the yard, playing music, dancing, at a wedding. These are things that are, outside of the norm, I think, which are nice.
And to that point, I should also mention that this will all occur outside. I don't know that they would allow all of these things to occur
or all those
necessarily
people.
indoors. So it's outdoor ceremony, outdoor reception, outdoor dinner.
So we need to take our allergy meds and have a wonderful
weekend. Yeah, get me started. I'm not sure if you can hear, but I've been affected by the allergies all week.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio. You can find everything you need on our BYU Radio app, where you can listen on demand. You can also find us over on Sirius XM channel 143.
The Lisa Show is available in podcast form. Find it, why don't you? Click the subscribe button so you never miss a single moment of this here show.
On Monday's show, we're talking about your optimal health. What is it? How do you find it?
Thank you for making The Lisa Show a part of your day.